nightmare.
Hello and welcome to Cinema Subculture, the podcast where we discuss everything strange, obscure and downright messed up in the world of movies. My name's Gary.
And I'm Simon.
And it's been a long, long time.
It has indeed. What have you been doing yourself?
I don't know.
Nothing?
No.
That's great.
Just thinking about the podcast.
Yeah. That's dedication,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not even doing it, thinking about it.
What have you been doing, Simon?
Well, Gary, I have to apologise to any of the listeners. I think most of the hold-up's been my fault on the recording schedule. I've been assisting with a short movie I've been helping out with for Elgato Film Productions. It's going to be called Skeletons in the Closet, and you guys can check it out on YouTube. I think it's Elgato Film Pro. It's not just a shameless plug. I'm trying to make excuses for myself for not having the podcast recorded, but that is honestly what I've been doing. I've been quite busy. I'm helping out with that, the production and stuff like that, and I'm actually colourist for the film as well. So I'm quite tired.
So it's productive time away.
Yes. I wasn't just like twiddling my thumbs. And masturbating, which is hard to do. You're trying to twiddle your thumbs and masturbate. I won't let you answer that, Gary. I'll stop you there.
Okay.
Letters on a postcard. So, what are we here to discuss in this triumphant return, Gary?
Yeah.
This is it. Make it count, Gary.
Okay. Make it a good one.
I never said that. Make it count.
Yeah.
What episode are we? 26?
God knows. 27.
Is it 27?
I think it might be 27.
I'm glad we haven't lost the old magic, Gary. It's one of those, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good.
So we're talking about two films.
Yeah. We thought since we'd been away, we'd give you an extra, you know, another film. I know we planned it and stuff.
Yeah.
But
so what we're doing? Carnival of Souls from 1962.
Yep.
Directed by Herc Harvey, and Equinox.
1970.
Okay.
Well, 1967 it was originally made.
Yeah.
And it was properly released in 1970. Okay, so what film will we look at first, Gary?
Well, we do Carnival of Souls first.
So it seems right.
Okay.
You know, A before E, except after C. It's E, isn't it? I before E.
Mm.
Yeah. You're going to delete this bit, aren't you? Good. okay, so Carnival of Souls.
Mm.
Like, mention again, you know how we spoke about before we did these films, that they're kind of in the category of so bad they're good kind of thing.
Mm.
Is that how you came to like find these films?
Did
you find them at a similar time or?
I think so. I think I just came to them through the Criterion Collection.
Okay.
Just it was a period I was trying to watch every film, and I fairly enjoyed them.
Yeah. Okay, so Carnival of Souls. What do you want to start off talking about with this?
Okay, well, here's the plot.
Yes, that's a good idea.
It follows the character of Mary, who is in a car crash.
Oh, no, wait, it's Betty.
What?
Aha, just kidding. You didn't get it. Did you just believe me? You're like, Mary, it must be I. That's fine. Sorry.
Yeah, she's in a car crash, survives. And she's in the process of moving to another town for a job. She's a church organist. But when she gets here, a lot of sort of spooky things start happening. That's it. Right? It's not a plot-heavy film. It's just sort of atmosphere type film, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely got the kind of like B-movie vibe to it when it opens.
Mm.
You know, it feels like kind of like sort almost like an invasion to the boys. And that's
right.
Just kind of... Step, you know, the town people when they're pulling the car out of the they don't pull the car out of the water to the end.
Right.
After the crash, you know, they're waiting.
Yeah,
they're dragging the river and stuff like that.
Mm.
And then the kind of lone woman who was in the crash emerges from the water. What were they? There was two cars in the crash. No, there was one car that actually went into the water, but there was two cars racing. Were they just drag racing? Were they just like, shooting the shit?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn crazy teens.
I know, that's crazy. Up.
That's what happens, like...
Is it?
Yeah.
Were you a bit of a boy racer guy in your younger days?
Well, I did have one sort of small crash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was going like 80 coming up the road.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened?
There's a sort of slight bend and there's a house that sits up there.
Yep, mm-hmm. He's talking to the right.
To the right, yeah.
In case you're near.
Yeah, somebody was turning up there and then I see them. I was kind of round the bend because I was going too fast.
I think this funny story leads to that was my auntie.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure that was my aunt.
This was something like 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I remember the story. Like, is my aunt Janice?
Oh, no way.
Back here.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure. Like she said, it was. I'm sure I told you this at the time.
Oh,
you crashed into her. I was like, oh, yeah, that's great. That's a weird like one. Yeah, you think? Yeah. There you go.
I always thought I can drive fast. I'm not gonna be one of these like crazy boy racers. I know better. But
you didn't.
I didn't know.
Jeez, oh, it's a harrowing story. At least didn't he turn out like this? You know, he didn't end up with a carnival of souls.
Didn't end up in the water, aye.
No. So anyway, back to the film.
Yep.
So yeah, they're having their racing, and then one of the cars gets thrown into the water.
Yes.
And only one person emerges, and they can't find the car either.
Mm.
Which I think didn't they try that hard, did they? Because...
Yeah, you might get those heavy currents.
Oh, well, I suppose, sorry, the currents in there.
Yeah.
Aye. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the reasons.
About the currents.
Yeah. So, she moves to her new town.
Yep.
Yeah, she moves into her new apartment, where she's allowed to take as many baths as she wants. She doesn't, her land, that sort of thing. What do you think that's supposed to mean? Just a water thing, is it a water charge type thing?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
She's into sort of hygiene and that.
Yeah.
So, as opposed to money.
Yeah. Don't let me stop cleaning yourself. Yeah. And also there's a kind of pushy gentleman neighbour across the way who keeps calling on her, Mr. Linden.
John.
Yes. John. And she's kind of weird with him. And she, one minute she's kind of very standoffish with him, and next minute she's like, "Is that coffee you've got?
Yeah.
Bring it in."
Well, good morning. I heard your alarm. I knew you'd be up. Guess what I got?
I can't imagine.
Just what it takes to start the day off right. I make it in my room. You know, it saves me having to go out and get dressed up. I had to get dressed to come over here anyway.
Oh, it looks just like what I need.
Well, and two cups of coffee coming up. I guess you took her on last night about me coming to your door and all, huh?
I'm not a very sociable person ordinarily. How can I resist an inducement like this?
What? Come on, I don't know all those big words. I'm just an ordinary guy who works in a warehouse, that's all.
So yeah, there's parts of this film where the main character... kind of starts to it's as if her sanity is slipping, but she slips outside of time almost,
mm-hmm.
and like mm-hmm. you know, the world becomes silent and they can't hear or see her, and I mean, like, well, I guess we're gonna spoil the ending that she's dead effectively. So what do you think? It seems to like take on a bit of a cycle when she goes into this world,
right?
And also seems to like return when she gets to the tree and the bird.
Well, sort of what happens is through the film she's sort of followed by the man.
Oh, I think, is that what he's called?
Yeah, I think so. Played by Herc Harvey.
Sure.
It's kind of a ghoulish figure.
Oh yeah.
I guess trying to capture her. Because she's going to have survived, but she shouldn't have.
She shouldn't have.
She should have died.
She should have died.
Yeah, and that's when she kind of gets pulled into the, I guess, ghost world.
Carnival of Souls.
Well, yeah.
You need another word for it.
Yeah.
and we do actually have a physical carnival that she visits.
I think it's a an interesting film. It's got a really heavy atmosphere. I think that's the kind of thing you take away from it.
Yeah.
It's this real sense of kind of foreboding. I think the thing, Herc Harvey was actually a professional filmmaker, which is quite interesting.
Right.
But he worked for a company that produced like educational and industrial films rather than going into like the feature
right.
Film side of it. So as a, if you would call it an exploitation film or a sort of indie horror, it's curious if you can compare it to Equinox later, as that the technical side of it is extremely proficient.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The cinematography is beautiful. The editing is really strong. I think to call it what makes it kind of so bad it's good is maybe the acting and the dialogue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what I was getting to was the kind of stiltedness of some of the dialogue gives it that uneasiness, contributes to that kind of strange mood.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And like the imagery, especially the carnival scenes with the dancing scenes near the end.
Yeah.
It comes off as almost a silent film. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Very like similar in look and timing and the kind of weirdness. Definitely not what I'm seeing, but the way I'm seeing it, I guess the imagery from like Vampire.
Sure.
You know, definitely kind of drew that back to my mind. Mm-hmm. Which is again weird because it does start off as such a kind of like, a B looking movie, almost like. This is not taking anything away from this film, but like Night of the Living Dead, like the way the end of Night of the Living Dead with the townspeople out and stuff like that can come across as a bit like, you know, like a B movie now, you know, like kind of something, as I say, like something like the Sorcerers from Outer Space kind of movie, right?
Right.
Whereas this starts off like that, but it quickly shifts into like a little more like kind of gothic,
right? Yeah.
You know, out of time with itself, you know. Which I think really works for it and makes it like more enjoyable to watch than some of the kind of like something that could have been a lot cheaper and nastier than it is.
The filmmakers had quite grand ambitions. They did want to make a kind of art horror film. I think they mentioned they were influenced by Ingmar Bergman and John Cocteau. They wanted to do something kind of like that, but on a low budget. Obviously, I think $30,000 was made for. And shot in 3 weeks, I think. So it's pretty good, yeah.
Quite impressive.
I think most of the actors were like local people, with the exception of the two main characters, John and Mary,
right?
Who were adapted before, I think. So they're pretty good, but some of the other ones are a wee bit rigid. But that kind of that's what's sort of charming about it.
Yeah.
Particularly the doctor.
I was going to mention him. Yeah.
He's pretty good, and
landlady. Yeah.
What'd you find out, Doctor?
Not very much, I'm afraid.
I'm sure glad you just happened around. I was going to call somebody, but I was afraid I'd have to pay the bill.
I came on purpose. I've been thinking about her ever since she left my office yesterday. What's she been up to?
Only the devil knows that.
I think, like, coming from like, the way the story goes, and even like the tone of it, I guess it reminded me of like some of like, the kind of the older like Twilight Zone episodes, you know, something like that. And I mean, the story's right out of something like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, that's where that kind of stuff kind of didn't come from, but definitely got like popularized. Mm. Popularized, sorry. The kind of twist ending of the dead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is an interesting watch. And it's the character, works really well. I mean, like, you see him maybe, what, 5 or 6 times through the film?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say a word, does he?
Yeah, no.
No. And it's really, really haunting. And he goes from looking fairly normal to looking very ghoulish, you know. And I mean, all the ghouls work really well, you know, the dancers and stuff
Yeah.
It is really quite creepy, especially near the end. Again, like something like, I think when they're chasing across the beach, it brought to mind like that the end of The Beyond a wee bit.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
When they're running, well, the painting, the pics the end, you know, how you see the painting first, with the bodies and stuff like that, it kind of brought that to my mind. I believe there's a remake of this. Wes Craven remade it.
Well, did he, like, his name was put on it?
Oh,
I
right.
I don't know if he had anything to do with it.
No, you're right, you're right. I think it didn't even... It just says Wes Craven Presents.
Right, aye.
I guess, It was Larry Miller that directed it. It was executive produced by Wes Craven. Okay.
Right.
Have you seen this?
No, I didn't hear... a few things I've read about it saying it's not worth it. But it was originally intended to be a sequel, I think.
Because
Candice Hellegloss, who played Mary, had wanted to do a sequel years after, and she'd like been working on a script,
right.
I think. And she, whoever was the kind of main producer for the sequel, she had been speaking with him, and he was up for doing that. And then he got the rights to do the sequel from Herc Harvey.
Right.
But then it went off and just as a sequel rather than doing a remake. So I think she was a bit annoyed at that, yeah.
I mean, the poster looks pretty shoddy. I mean, you can't tell much from a poster generally, but yeah, it doesn't instill confidence. It's a shame. Wonder what the sequel treatment was.
I'm not sure.
Mary is back again. Yeah. You know? This time she didn't. That's quite interesting, though.
Mm.
It went public domain, so it did, in fact, at one point. There you go, some more tidbits.
Mm.
Let's throw some more stuff in. Art Ellison played the minister, did you know that?
Right, no, I didn't know that.
You know who Art Ellison is?
No.
I don't know either, but he lit up on my Wikipedia, so I'm going to click on him and see what he was in.
Okay.
Better known as Art Ellison. Oh no, Arthur Wayland Ellison.
Oh, yeah, of course, I know him, yeah.
He's been in. Director Herc Harvey felt that Art Ellison has acted in more sci fi films than any other.
Sorry?
But there's name last to me. He's best known for Carnival of Souls. Right, that's shite, Gary. That's no good stuff, that at all. Right, how many minutes we got of actual stuff? Can pump it up. Jokes and singing. Right. Is there anything else you wanted to say about Carnival of Souls?
Mentioned there about how it had kind of art house ambitions.
Sure.
It may be interesting, it has a kind of very downbeat ending. That's from the anti-Hollywood tradition and that preceded that tendency in horror maybe later on.
Yeah, I guess so.
It didn't resolve everything. It's actually, the twist is that she's actually dead, as we said.
It resolves it.
Yeah, it resolves
that she's dead
to what's going on, but.
Doesn't it resolve it for the main character?
It's not a happy ending.
Yes, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Not sometimes that can be a bit annoying, like the old Deus Ex Machina, but I think
it would have been fairly early in trying that, like, in film.
Yeah, it could be. But I think in this film, it's more just a kind of cherry on top.
Yeah, I guess so. It's kind of like a film where you kind of know what's going on. I think, like, you know, it's kind of they're spelling it out for you. But it's everything that's in between.
And I don't know if it's that logical, because she only kind of experiences the kind of symptoms of being a ghost at certain times.
Mm-hmm.
Which is she always a ghost? Is she in and out of ghostliness?
That's it, I
she's
guess.
A physical, she can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Patrick Swayze.
And who do these other characters represent if they are seeing her?
Mm.
Our landlady, Lyndon.
Yeah.
You know, she's out at the pub with him at one point.
She is, aye.
What's the matter? Don't you drink either?
Not really.
Not really. How else is there if you don't drink really? Answer me that. Now, me, I not only drink really, I really drink.
You know, so how does that translate into who are they? Because if she is dead, then they have to be either dead or a figment of our imagination, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. But, I I don't think it really matters.
No.
Yeah.
Doesn't get it.
Right, so one point I was wanting to talk about, sort of difference between this film and maybe if it was like remade today.
Sure. Or 1988.
Well, yeah, and just in terms of the difference between older So Bad It's Good and So Bad It's Good today.
Mm-hmm.
If this was remade today, do you think we'd like it more or less? If it's like same quality and all that.
If it was the same quality. See, look, you're too So Bad It's Good today is of nowhere near the quality of this filmmaking wise, I don't think.
Yeah,
most of them anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was made today, I think this would be heralded as slightly higher in the rungs of So Bad It's Good. I don't even know if, depending if they pushed the art style in a little more, I think it could come off as quite a more of a cult classic.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'd be a little more lenient to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, it's gorgeously shot, and I mean, most of the acting is pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, looking at something like, obviously, it's not necessarily a horror or anything like that, but like Mulholland Drive,
right.
Like, I feel like it would fall into something like that,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where people, you know, most mainstream audience members would find it quite hard to sit through or follow or get it, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And miss the point of it almost.
Yeah.
Where I think this, if remade properly,
yeah,
could have a similar effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the twist, if we've seen that too often now for it to work. That may hold
true.
It back. But I feel as if they were going to remake it, they may reinvent that somehow and try and hide it more or something, you know, work something new into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I mean, I think if this film was released today, shot with modern what am I trying to say?
Modern conventions, like,
yeah, but
styles.
If it was shot in the exact same with the same techniques and and things like that today, I think it would be, as I say, far more leniently looked upon.
You're right, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, well, what I was thinking about, my fondness for this film and Equinox and my sort of disinterest in like more modern things, like when we talked about Machine Girl, like
yes,
I wasn't really into that at all.
Yeah.
And like things like the kind of Roger Corman TV movies, like Birdemic, I don't know if that was
Sharknado.
Yeah. They don't really interest me at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's I have a kind of fondness for like the past in a way.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that's part of it. The fact that it's made and set in the '60s is kind of more. Is that's maybe it's what's interesting about it.
But the main difference I see between those two things are something like Carnival of Souls and Equinox are made sincerely.
Well, that's another
and
thing.
And made
yeah.
as
yeah.
serious films with people trying to actually do something.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'd say more in the case of Equinox, which comes off a little more like something like Evil Dead. You know, the acting and some of the production value lets it down.
Hmm.
Not in the case, I'd say Carnival Souls is just down to a few poor or over the top performances.
Hmm.
And okay, the story's a little bit. It's a treaded road, you know. It's been done many times, that story, but it's made with the sincerest of intentions. Mm. You know what I mean? It's not like, I don't know, like Ghost Man. You know what I mean? Like it was Nado. You know. So I feel like these ones we're getting now, like, what was it?
Have you seen The Room yet at all?
No, haven't you seen it yet?
No, I watched the first half an hour of it.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Still disappointed.
It's weird.
It's crazy,
but
I haven't brought that out yet.
Right.
But like there was one that was a like Sharktopus,
right?
Mm. Half shark, half octopus.
Yeah, yeah.
There was another one, Mega Shark versus Super.
Was it Giant Octopus?
Something like that. Some bullshit like that. But it's like they're trying to get the. It's almost like they're calling back to the Godzilla days,
right? Yeah,
the kaiju films, right?
Okay,
but. They're really pushing. They're not doing it sincerely. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I don't even think the kind of the Godzilla films, especially not the first lot, were made with any other intention other than these are meant to be kind of action movies. You know, event movies almost.
Yeah.
whereas these are made very cheaply and have a value to some. I mean, I'm not going to discount, because I mean, people watch them and get off on them because they are so bad, they're good, right? And that's fine, but
yeah,
I feel the difference is that with something like Carnival of Souls, it is actually a well-made film.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's and it, as I say, the intention was sincere, and it's made by like a skilled set of filmmakers, which I feel these other films are just like rushed and put together. Yeah, they're put together on a concept of like, okay, we're going to have like a tornado filled with sharks.
Right, yeah.
It's fucking awesome, man. You know? How many beers you had?
Yeah.
Which is fine. God, people want to make their money that way, that's fine. You know, and if people want to spend their money that way, that's fine as well. But
we're in a different economic climate with cinema, and in the sense that these films today just go like straight to DVD or straight to TV.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
They don't. There's no real like, exploitation in the scene that they can go to like sort of greenhouse theaters and all that.
Drive-ins. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to think now that you said that, like, of the most recent So Good It's Bad film, that was it like a big film? Something that would have been released at theaters, or can you think of anything in recent years, in the last 10, 15 years?
Oh, I think The Room's blew up. Like, I don't.
Yeah, The Room, but again, it wasn't like a big wide release. You know, something. Well, I guess maybe Carnival Souls wouldn't have been either, but I'm thinking something, you know, like The Room is the one that probably springs to most people's mind, but I'm thinking something that would have been released, like, wide.
Well, that's the thing now, because to get into theatres now, you really need a big like a studio behind you, a big distributor.
Yes, so most films that try to, I guess nowadays, as you say, like they are good and they get through, you know, they get back in and get to theatre and things like that, or they go intentionally for the so bad it's good, and either some of them succeed too bad, and some completely fail. So maybe that's the difference now. But yeah, I can't think of anything really that I've seen anyway. Sorry, that I've seen. What about you? Even straight to video or anything like that? That's been lit, you know, that has actually been. Zombie Strippers was alright.
Right, I didn't see it.
No, it wasn't, it was alright.
Yeah.
Robert England in it, sorry. It's a tough one. As you say, they don't really make them like they used to, literally.
That's it, yeah.
I mean, I guess like 30,000 dollars used to get you a lot more than it does nowadays. But you think with the cheapness? You think with the price of making a film, like really technically you could make it on your iPhone.
You think
there would be some more good, bad.
Maybe there is. But I just like there's so much stuff out there.
It's true, that's true. Yeah. I guess that's good swings the other way as well, that there's so much bad.
Yeah. Aye. No, I was just thinking, because I was probably, I think aesthetically, I have a fondness for like things set in the 50s or 60s, just because I think it's more like beautiful. Like, even though like I'm into the technology and that, there's something kind of romantic about just being less stuff. Everything's kind of more simple, you know what I mean? Less crap kicking about.
Yeah, it's a more almost wholesome time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I do feel that. That's a kind of bullshit view. I think that's a kind of romantic view of the past, but that's something like American suburbia on film.
Yeah.
That sort of mythic status of that, as opposed to like actual living there. It would have been like quite oppressive, I think, but there's something really cool about like the way like Tim Burton puts like suburbia into his movies.
Yeah.
I recently watched Frankenweenie.
I haven't seen that.
Right. And it's a really, or something like Spielberg, like, kids kicking about in bikes and that.
I was thinking like something like Equinox and that look, and you know, that kind of time, and then you see something like Halloween, and it's right on that cusp of.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it literally happened. I spoke about it in loads of the documentaries about, you know, people used to leave their doors open, and after that film, they started locking themselves. And it's, I think it's you're very much seeing that the last of that kind of American suburban era, you know, the late 70s.
Yeah.
It's the very tail end of it, I feel. Of the look, anyway, maybe not the attitude or the actual living, the way it is romanticised in some of the other films.
Yeah.
But, No, I definitely agree. It's got a warm feeling, like, look, you know, and it kind of...
Yeah.
Just a more optimistic look to it feels, and it's, which is weird, as you say, it's probably, it probably was a little more, a lot more oppressive to live in it, but... I definitely get your meaning, though. It's got a warmer feeling to it, I guess, you know, as well, and I guess you could say that going from, like shit, well, shittier version, stock of film to, like... really good stock of film and more recent films and now digital, you know, you're kind of losing that kind of fuzzy texture to things that make things look nice and cuddly.
We'll move on to Equinox.
Yeah, we can indeed.
Interestingly, I think the Dennis Muren and the original filmmakers were kind of products of that environment.
Yeah.
American suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Dennis Muren talked about the film was made possible birth of consumer grade 16mm cameras,
right?
Which shot the film with. So.
Yeah, I mean it must. There must be many lost. I say treasures lightly, but you know what I mean. There must be loads of people that were trying at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Cause, I mean, this as we said was like filmed. Originally, the Equinox, A Journey into the Supernatural,
right? Yeah.
In 67, and I mean, it almost never surfaced at all. You know, if is it Jack Woods?
No. Yeah. Well, they made the film, and then Dennis Muren was trying to get it distributed.
Yeah.
And they took it to Jack H. Harris.
That's right. Sorry.
Who was a producer and distributor, and he was going to put it out, but he got the film like. Jack Woods, who'd been a director and editor and different things, to like kind of touch it up and put some additional scenes in, and that was the version that became Equinox.
So I mean, if he hadn't picked that up, I mean, very likely this wouldn't have seen the light of day, you know. So there must be many out there that are similar, you know, films that just didn't. If you know, previous to that, before the kind of consumer grade 16mm cameras, they wouldn't have got made if they weren't going to be sold, probably, you know, if they weren't for the studio or whatever. There must have been loads of people having a go at it, as there is today, you know, like so many more. It just got more exponential, but yeah. So the original version still exists, but it was never released, I believe.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
The first time was the Criterion DVD, I think.
Okay, right, that was,
Yeah.
It looks a little more beat up, the transfer and stuff like that, on that, as if it hasn't been well looked after.
Right.
So, Equinox, Gary, what's this one about?
It is about, essentially it's follows four teenagers as they take a trip into the American woods, go for a picnic, also to visit their professor, friend.
Yeah, I think it's David's professor.
Right, yeah. Science professor, physics, yeah.
Yeah.
But when they get there, he's disappeared. Mm. So they attempt to find out what's happened to him.
His cabin's bust up.
Caved in or something.
Oh,
yeah, but they find a strange book.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
What do you think of the film, Simon?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. Yeah. I thought it was it definitely, you'd kind of described it to me as a kind of a precursor to something like Evil Dead. Mm. It definitely was that, and it was fun. You know, it was proper, like kind of like your creature feature, but like... As I said, I think at the time we were watching it, it was just coming off the kind of sweetness of the kind of the 60s,
right?
You know, into the kind of when Evil Dead was made, you know, it felt like a nice, just right in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the stop motion animation, I mean, it's fun. I mean, this is definitely so bad it's good,
right.
You know. a lot of kind of dodgy models and over the top performances. And some bad dubbing,
right.
but overall, I thought, I mean, it was a nice little ride. So it was, I say, exactly what I was looking for as a big fan of Evil Dead. You know,
yeah, it does seem to be a kind of showcase for the special effects of Dennis Muren, who went on to join Industrial Light and Magic, and then went crazy, did Star Wars, Jurassic Park. all that type of thing.
Yeah.
So
he worked quite a lot with. Did he work with Harryhausen?
Well, see, he knew Harryhausen
right.
at first because
they lived
around the corner or something.
Right.
It's quite handy.
Yeah.
Give me some tips.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so those scenes are really good, and then everything else is maybe just kind of built around that. Mm-hmm. The script it's a bunch of teenagers, isn't it, making the film. So it's not a great script, but I think that's the kind of charm of it. The way the story progresses, there's sort of big, every like 10 minutes it just stops in terms of narrative, and they just talk, kind of talk for 5-10 minutes. But there's a real charm to it. I don't know, I really love the dialogue, even though it's kind of like naive, and I mean, I don't know, it's not necessarily bad dialogue in the sense that you wouldn't see it in a normal film, but it's something, maybe the dubbing as well.
Yeah, just kinda... to me it was the delivery of the main character, he never panicked, never got scared. I mean, someone gets killed and you go, and what did he do that for?
Yeah.
You know, that was literally his delivery for it, like, for his tone and everything, which was so comedic in like a lot of places, you know. I can't remember the one where it was like, you're not Paul.
Jim.
But that was the way it was delivered, and he never changed his tone.
Aye.
And I think that definitely added to the kind of the tone of the film. I mean, all in all, it was pretty impressive they managed to get the whole cast back together for like the reshoots and like, 3 years later.
Yeah.
I'd say they must have been having a fun enough time for them all to come back, I think, or been doing nothing else. But I think, having watched like the original cut with the commentary and things like that, I mean, definitely the inserts have definitely shaped the film better. I mean, there's a character who's just completely inserted that didn't exist before.
Asmodeus, the park ranger.
Yes, uh-huh.
Aye.
Which is weird when you see it without him in it.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because I watched the 70s version first. And like the when they see the cast, you know, there's loads of stuff. I think that this is one that I think is worth seeing. Like Carnival of Souls is definitely worth seeing, but this I think you need to see it to believe.
Right,
to get all the stuff, because anything I say about it just now is it feels like I'm kind of ruining the delivery of the timing and stuff like that. The way things are put to it are just perfect, you know.
Yeah. Well, the inserted shots kind of give it the sort of classic exploitation things of like changes in continuity, shots not matching, stuff like that, changes in location and all that. Like the classic one was the character of Jim, his sideburns like about 2 inches longer in the 70s.
I think it was all was it Susan?
Right.
The character, like she was saying with the commentary, like she was like, they said about going back to shoot it, and she's like, shit, did I have those trousers still? You know? She was like, panicking, she didn't have the same the costume or anything.
Yeah, there's one shot that they actually pulled off much better in the 70s one, was the shot at the start, or the scene at the start with the sort of driverless car.
Yeah.
Coming towards, what's the dude's name? What's the main guy? No, Jim.
David,
right. And in the original version, you can see the driver.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Whereas what they did in the remake was to like change the angle. They put the camera in the driver's seat of the car, the passenger seat of the car.
That's right.
So it works better.
Definitely. And also, I think in the original cut, you see the big monster thing at the beginning. I'm pretty sure.
Right, okay, maybe.
I'm sure he gets that whole "you'll be dead in 1 year" speech right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Whereas in the recut version, he doesn't get that to the end, which I think works better because you don't know why he's panicking about the cross so much in the recut version, whereas in the original,
right,
you get it. I don't know, is there anything, is the cross even in the original version?
I don't know.
I'm just trying to remember, because I remember them making the shape that
Do
you remember like that line when when they're talking about making symbols, and like David says, we could make symbols, and Jim's like, yeah, because we took woodshop class or something, some shit like that, and you think he's taking the piss. It sounds like he's being like fucking weird carpenters or whatever. And David goes, yeah, that's right. And they're being sincere. Okay, this is actually what's happening. It's awesome. It's just so good.
So this is made on a budget of $6,500.
$6,000?
Yeah.
Jeez, oh, in the 60, late 60s? Mm. And Carnival of Souls was released 62?
Yeah.
I mean, you can definitely see the quality shift, obviously. Yeah. But, I mean, any film that's then or now, I mean, that would have probably been, that still wouldn't, but it would have been quite a lot of money to raise.
Yeah.
But geez, oh, 6,000, that's pretty decent. And that include the reshoots and stuff, aye?
Well, maybe that was the original.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it says that spent like $6,500 to make Equinox at that time a short fiction film, science fiction film. And then like, they shot other stuff to make it feature length. So what, like, this obviously has a lot of elements that are very similar to Evil Dead.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
yeah, I read a quote from, I can't remember who it was, someone who worked in Evil Dead. Did.
Tom Sullivan.
Right.
Sorry, Tom Sullivan.
He said he'd definitely seen the film before, but he doesn't remember any discussion about it. Yeah.
I mean, as it's weird, I mean, maybe just the... like somebody now having an idea of having like a... a CCTV haunted house
right.
film,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
In the wake of like paranormal activity or something like that. So maybe it was as innocent as that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like ripped right from it. It's just it's kind of the look.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of It wouldn't take much to imagine that the Evil Dead takes place in the late 60s as well. You know, what I mean, it wouldn't take
looks
slightly different. You know, but looking back on it. And the kind of dialogue delivery and stuff, and there's a lot of stop motion animation in that film as well. So I guess it's maybe just been in the conscious of the look of how to make a low budget, you know, horror film. So I think it definitely owes it something. I don't think it'd been directly. It's not been directly ripped off or anything.
No,
but it definitely owes it something. I mean, even if it's just showing what you can do with like $6,000.
Yeah. Okay, so that will wrap up our in-depth conversation of those two films there.
You may have said that was so bad it was good. Oof, Gary.
Oof, yeah, yeah. Yep.
With that, we shall move into
Random Shit.
So welcome to Random Shit, the part of the podcast where we do pretty much anything else that we've got to cover, any other business. So this is where we talk. We used to do kind of fairly strict kind of news / pickups and things like that. So it's a little. I'm trying to make it a little more loose now.
Right.
You know, where we just discuss anything we want to talk about, Gary. I know it's kind of old news now because obviously we haven't recorded for a while. But I saw that the Nosferatu Blu-ray had a firm release date now.
Yes.
Did you see the teaser trailer?
I did.
It was pretty. Looks okay. It's like a YouTube trailer or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looked okay.
Okay. Aye.
What did you think?
Hard to tell that those bit rates and all that. But
The clarity, like, it looked kind of clearer. You know what I mean?
Right.
To me, anyway, when I was watching it. Still a lot of like print damage and stuff. I don't know what they can do about that. I don't know if they have done anything about it. I don't know what I was expecting really, but
right.
What do you think about that yourself?
Oh, right. Just kind of wasn't paying attention that much.
All right, you're dead.
Sorry.
That's fine. That's okay. Moving on.
It was like, aye, that'll do.
Have you still got the Steelbook pre-ordered?
Oh, aye.
You go for Steely?
Yes. Seen it's playing at GFT?
I did. No. Did I see that it was playing? I can't remember if I saw that.
Aye.
No, are you going to go and check it?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's a rare thing for you to go and just want to see a film, GFT. If you're going to go, I'm going to go.
Aye,
when's it showing?
I don't know. It must be end of the month.
Man, what are you want
to do?
No, they're showing something else, I'm sure, in Halloween, because I've checked for Halloween.
Aye.
See, they're showing Halloween at a drive-in type thing in Glasgow.
Aye.
Right, and that's great. That's okay. Yeah. It's £25 a car, which is okay.
Right,
it's £5 each. That's cheaper than going to the cinema. They say that you can use your car's sound system So they must be doing some sort of FM transmission.
Right, okay.
So you tune it into your radio or DAB, I guess. I don't know how they'll do it. But I can work with that. My problem is that we live in the UK and most of our cars aren't convertibles.
Mm.
So how do the people in the back seat see it?
Yeah.
Or even the people in the front seat?
They did not, yeah.
Aye, that's... again, Gary, this is the podcast. People can't see what you're doing. Weirdly, he was holding his penis and holding it up like it was some sort of periscope. That's weird, Gary. Don't do that. You'll never see the film like that.
Yeah.
And if you do it, it'll only be in monoscope. Because of your one-eyed monster. Anyway. So, moving on. So I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that.
Aye.
It's also shown somewhere else, SeaWorld or something like that, near Loch Lomond, yeah. Ben Lomond take place. And it's shown a bunch of other films, like there's four films, like Halloween-esque films. And Halloween's the last one shown at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
But it's £15 per ticket.
Mm.
And I'm like, so I've got to travel to fucking like Loch Lomond, which is a wee bit of a distance for us where we are in Western Scotland, but... So I'm like, oh, I've got my new Blu-ray, I'll just watch that. I'm like, it's just...
And see the driving, what happens if it's raining? It's a bit shit.
Aye.
Yeah.
That's what I'm like. So I don't know if it's driving in name only, but not much details. Right. I don't fancy it at all.
Mm.
If it, as I say, if we were in the States and it was, you know, I could live with that, but it's not a proper driving to me. Yeah, yeah. So... Yeah, Nosferatu's shown on between the 25th and 27th of October. It's the Friday to Sunday. But anyway, anyone wants to know, so that's when it's on.
Aye.
At the GFT. What else, Gary? What you want to talk about?
Well, we mentioned Tenebrae.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Do that.
A brand new transfer.
Yep, from Arrow Video. They announced that they were doing a steelbook.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people... Well, I definitely presumed it was just... Much like the Beyond steelbook, where it's being re-released in a steelbook version. But Gary pointed out that they'd mentioned, they confirmed that it's a brand new transfer.
Yeah.
This is one of the, alongside the Bird with the Crystal Plumage, that I released of Argento's films, the other most maligned transfer of the set. It's pretty bad. It's watchable.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to turn my sharpness down about like 10% to make it like bearable.
Mm.
And it was okay. I mean, it wasn't horrendous, you know what I mean, at that point. But it'll be nice to see if they get a new... I mean, is it a new transfer just for them or is it the same one as the French transfer? Because I've heard a lot of things that Synapse is releasing in the States. And
okay.
They say they've got the French transfer available to them. And you'd think... a European release, we would have a similar...
Was that a quality transfer?
Yeah, really good. Yeah. The only problem was the French Blu-ray had burnt in French subtitles.
Oh, right, sure.
And all but the French audio.
Right, okay.
You know? So I think that was why a lot of people were...
Right, probably that one then, yeah. That's the one that's it's out there.
Yeah.
In other countries.
So that'll definitely be nice to see. I don't know if is there much in the way of new features on it?
Don't think so.
No. But I mean, I'm definitely going to grab this. It's a Zavi exclusive, $14.99 currently. They're like pre-ordering it now.
Yeah.
Which ain't a bad price, really. Okay, sure. A lot of people are out there shouting about double dipping, and I get that. But they were putting out what they had available at the time.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you like the Slipbox releases and you've got that, fair enough. I know they released a dual format. You may be a bit bummed if you've got that, but
you
probably got that for fairly cheap.
Yeah, I didn't have it before you did, but you're in the camp of, if it's better, then you don't mind double dipping.
No, and again, if I like the film, I mean, it depends. I mean, generally, I am going to double dip.
Mm.
I mean, this is something we've spoke about recently, about maybe having a section in the podcast about double dipping and things like that.
Yeah.
There was something recently, what was it? And it was a film that I wasn't even a fan of, necessarily. What was it? I had a good example, and it was something that's like, I'm not even that bothered about, but I wanted to get like a better version of the film because it was released. I'll find out what it was because I've probably got it on my wish list. But yeah, I don't mind buying this because I really enjoyed the film.
It's
definitely one of my favourite Argentos. I think it's quite fun. So I'd be very interested to see this in better quality.
Yeah, I can understand a wee bit people being annoyed, but I think it's the nature of the home video game. Like, there's always better versions of films coming out down every sort of years down the line.
Yeah.
So there's never really a definitive one.
Well, that's it. And I know it's pretty soon after the original, but as they've kind of said themselves, this probably wouldn't be happening if Xavi weren't financing the Steelbook.
Yeah.
So I think that's given them the kind of onus to put, you know, a new transfer on it. They could have easily, like they did with the Beyond, released just the same transfer.
Yeah, yeah.
And still made money off it.
Aye.
Because obviously they can and will still make money off of these.
Mm.
And as many people who have bought Tenebrae already, myself included, would have probably bought that if they hadn't got it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to being able to get the slipbox version, would maybe went for the Steelbook. The Steelbooks is pretty nice artwork and things. So they could have easily screwed people that way. And that really would have been a tragedy if they were able to get their hands on a new transfer.
Yeah.
So at least they are putting in a new transfer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we won't. Hopefully, their new set of transfer policy, we won't see that kind of thing again, where mm-hmm. they release a kind of substandard one. But I mean, if they hadn't released it whenever that came out, like 2010 or something,
yeah,
then you would have like 3 years of people complaining saying, "Release Tenebrae, why aren't it's already out in other countries?"
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, that's the thing, and people are complaining about the transfer as is.
Mm.
So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I know what people are saying about like a disc replacement program.
Mm.
But that works. That's fine if it's something like with Zombie Flesh Eaters. I totally agree with that. That was an error on the disc.
Yeah. Mm.
This is down to a transfer that was available to them at the time. There's nothing they could do about this when it was released. So I don't think it's fair to ask them to go out of pocket. Basically, they're releasing it and saying, like, here, we've managed to get a new version. We're not just recycling everything. We're giving you new packaging, whatever. And it's here if you want it.
Mm.
You know? So, and they can't go out of business over offering us what we kind of want.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. I would definitely pick this up. So, along with the announcement of the Tenebrae Steelbook, the Arrow have also announced that there's a couple of titles that are probably going to be going out of print soon.
Mm.
They're not out yet, but the Obsession, Brian De Palma film,
yeah,
which I'm sure they said a while ago was low in stock because I bought it at that point.
All right, okay.
Because when they re-release it in the dual format, or the unlimited edition, whatever they're calling now, it's not going to have the script, the book script, which is
makes it
quite a big package with that and stuff. Mm. I don't know if it's dropping any discs or anything like that. I'm sure it's just the same. I think it's only one disc. I could be wrong. Argento's Inferno.
Yeah.
Which is going to be coming out in a dual format as well. Unfortunately, it's losing the second disc, which is a DVD. It has quite a lot of extra features on it, actually, including the Kermode documentary.
Right, aye.
Which features interviews with, I think, Romero and Carpenter, things like that, are on that, talking about Argento. So I decided to pick that up fairly recently, actually, because I thought I'm not letting... I think it was only Argento that I didn't have from Arrow.
Right, okay.
So I thought I might as well pick it up because I want that documentary and things like that. So they're going to be releasing that, as I say, without the disc. You'll get a DVD with it, but it'll be just the same as the first disc.
Mm.
So we were talking about this, weren't we, like in reference to dual format and like why they're releasing stuff.
Yeah, the different strategies that companies to sort of keep costs down.
Down.
It's just that it seems slightly annoying that what Arrow have decided that what they've been doing for a while is the deluxe slip boxes for the first run, then replaced by a more simple Amory. A slip box, if you want a slip box, buy it first, but you get the same version in an Amory later. Mm. I think that's fine. But to actually penalise like people by sort of dropping content, I don't know if that's quite fair.
Well, we'll come on to a second when we talk about like the Criterion equivalent, but by all whatever people are saying, the Criterion things, that the discs don't really cost that much to make.
Mm.
The actual discs themselves. Yeah, yeah. So really, it seems weird to drop content. If you know, it seems like it would almost be erroneous just to include it. You know, just fire it in anyway. Like, it wouldn't cost them much to do that.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know loads about it, but like, it seems to be that DVD author and prices have come down quite a bit.
Yeah.
So it seems a shame not to just include that as a kind of.
Mm.
And you have a three disc, you know, it's only a DVD, it's not even another Blu-ray. specifically for that set. Obviously, I don't know what they've done with other sets. Obviously, they're stopping doing the slip boxes altogether, really, now. I'd say that they've moved to the new packaging style, which I haven't actually picked any of those up yet, the new Arrow stuff. I don't know, it's harder to see, and this isn't really true, but it's harder to see when you're looking for it in a store, what I mean? Those blue and white boxes just popped out. But to be honest, but not a lot that I've been desperate to pick up. It's been released recently from them. But like, so the Criterion were had released a statement about this, a similar thing. They're going to go dual format.
Yeah.
And from their point of view, it's more of a fact of like, we can't afford to do the packaging for both.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fair enough. I understand. Mm-hmm. I can understand that. And okay, it's going to mean that people just want the DVD version are going to have to pay a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But the it's still going to be the same price as their Blu-ray sets.
Yeah, yeah.
And their argument is that doing this, they're going to still be able to do the premium packaging.
Yeah.
So it seems almost like with Arrow, and again, we don't know the financial state, but it seems almost that they're kind of doing it the complete opposite. They're wanting their cake and not to eat it.
Right.
Or they're not wanting their cake and they're not wanting to eat it. They're doing away with the premium packaging, and they're taking away content as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think Arrow is a statement on Facebook saying that they can't expect, because after it's been out a few years, like, they can't charge full price for it, or like retailers don't charge full price. That's saying that it's not fair to have someone paying half, say 50% off after a couple of years. That's sort of unfair to people who buy it in the first day. But
I don't agree with that at all.
Yeah,
that totally runs.
I mean, not everyone can afford to buy. Even you might want six releases a month, but most people probably couldn't afford that.
And I mean, let's face it, like, that's the beauty of, like, if you're able to wait,
yeah,
I mean, anything, you buy a car 6 months down, maybe not 6 months, but like 3 years down the line, it's not going to cost the same price, but you're still getting all the features of
it. Sure, I know.
It's just not as new as it was, and that's the point. You know, if you want it day one, to have that and to be a part of the conversation about that release and get that content, you're choosing when you pay for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you wait a while and the retailer has chosen to put down the price and you pick it up, then, man, that's like 101 for collectors of anything.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look at something like the Tenebrae thing. If they, like, someone who wants to pick that up now and who isn't bothered with the transfer is probably going to be able to pick that up fairly cheap. And that, what's wrong with that? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I also don't know, like, when HMV or somewhere like that copies, do they not then own them? How does it work?
Well, they can still
send them back.
Send them back if they don't sell them.
Right, okay.
I think that's how it works, but
I don't know. I don't really agree with that. I mean, no one else seems to be doing that, and I know, again, we don't know their exact financial strategy or what, but it just seems a little, as opposed to Criterion, who are saying, okay, we're going to put the exact same content, there's going to be no drop in content, it's just the fact that we're amalgamating the two sets so that we don't have to do a big run of DVD packaging and a big run of Blu-ray packaging to make it worth the while running it, and then be left with loads of DVD packaging, because, to be honest, the market for DVD alone is dropping.
Yeah, it's interesting, they were saying the split is like 60-40, and there are customers who are Blu-ray as opposed to DVD.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting.
I mean, but they're saying, look, we're still going to give you the premium packaging.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that we can't, you know, do two separate versions, which I think that's fair. I think there's no problem. I don't have any problem with that at all. I mean, as I've said to you before, if I get a dual format thing, then I just always think, well, not everybody I know has a DVD player, a Blu-ray player. Most people have DVD players now. But you know what I mean? So there is always that option of, like, you don't have to give out your Blu-ray disc.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
If you
loan it to someone. Which is, as a collector who can be protective of his stuff, that's kind of nice to know that, like, yeah, well, I'm never going to use this disc anyway, so here, have a loan to that one. You know, just the disc, not the packaging.
With Criterion stuff, the only kind of downside I thought when I heard this news is, it's maybe, I'm not really going to use the DVD, so when it's a case of, like, there are a sort of bigger two disc Blu-ray sets, that's going to be two discs, two Blu-rays and three DVDs.
Yeah.
That's three DVDs that are just sitting in the package that I'm never really going to use, but
that's true.
That's a kind of trivial thing. Like,
you do worry that maybe they'll start putting some of the, what was that? Is it Zartocci?
Oh, is that a Ouija?
A Ouija.
Yeah.
Set, was it quite a big set or?
Yeah, that's something like 26 discs.
Right.
Which is a combo set as well. Just crazy.
So it's 26, including the combo or?
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know how what the split is, but if you're just a Blu-ray collector, you're suddenly get like an extra 15 DVDs that you probably don't want.
But they said that it's kind of one way you put it is the height of a Blu-ray, and if you put it the other way, it's the height of a DVD.
Right, okay, aye.
I think that's quite interesting, that's weird. But apparently it's quite a compact set, I haven't seen pictures of it.
Yeah,
but
I think the Blu-rays are like 3 discs per film, or something
right,
like that.
Right, okay.
3 films per disc, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. But yeah, so that's where we're at with that. What else, Gary? What else we got? Anything else you've...
No, other news, really.
We've kind of stopped doing pickups mostly, but like I just wanted to, like, since it's been a little while, and you and I haven't really talked about this, I wanted to probably just go through some pickups if you're up for it.
Okay.
Let's see. I picked up the Halloween 35th anniversary digibook.
Oh yes, yeah.
Pretty nice. I do like it. I wasn't sure about the cover. But it's definitely, and it doesn't look like remember we wondered if it looked like an HD DVD.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like that at all. The actual disc itself, the transfer's really nice. It's I think a lot more true to the original intent. Colours and things like that, and it's been cleaned up quite well as well. It's 7.1 soundtrack on there. I only have a 5.1 set myself, but it sounded pretty good through that. It's also got the original mono and things like that,
really?
You know, the usual kind of stuff. New commentary with Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis. I think that's the first time they've ever done a commentary together for one of their films. And a new documentary with, it's an interview basically for an hour with Jamie Lee Curtis. I haven't watched yet, but yeah, all in all, a really nice disc set. The digibook's really nice. It's not a thick book, but plenty of like kind of candid pictures and stuff like that that I haven't seen before. But yeah, I got that off of DVD World USA, and it turned up pretty nice.
Yeah.
You know, no bashes or nothing. So that was they're doing all right over there. I also picked up the Day of the Dead release from Scream Factory.
Mm-hmm.
Again from DVD World, and it came pretty much unscathed. I've heard some mixed reviews in the transfer for this.
Okay.
That was one of the main reasons I was buying it, because I'd heard there was a new transfer, and it's really weird because it's like, I mean, we're talking about double dipping. And this is the third transfer this has had between the UK and the US.
Right.
And it's different again, you know what I mean? So, but there's a lot of complaints about it. There's one instance of a flash of kind of print damage.
Oh, right.
That isn't in anything else. It's a lot warmer in tone.
Okay.
Looks a little bit more like Dawn of the Dead, the kind of transfer from that. I mean, I think it looks good. Although there's people talking about it being like, you know, remember how I showed you the comparison between the US and UK one? It was almost as the UK one had been stretched a little bit vertically.
Right.
I think there's something they reckon might be similar with this one, but it's hard to tell. I mean, I've looked at screen caps, but it's got a new George A. Romero documentary on it that's pretty meaty and pretty good. So I'm in for that. I was hoping I'd be able to get rid of my... I'm not bothered about having it, but getting my Anchor Bay one gone because it's got the two commentaries on it from that I bought that version for, effectively. So, but it's a nice enough set, and it's got the, you know, the wrestle cover and things like that. And let's see, that new documentary is meant to be pretty good. Also picked up the Hitchcock set.
Oh, did you?
Just as an aside, I got it for my birthday. I watched Rear Window.
Yeah.
Which I'd never seen before.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. And that's really, I've got other stuff, but that's probably all I wanted to really speak about. Do a bit of double dip corner. You double dipped in anything recently, or thinking about double dipping in anything?
I can show you something I've got. It's a Korean Blu-ray of Melancholia.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like me and Gary are like probably many of you and whatever, like obsessive collectors. We often like to have the best version of either a transfer or the best special features. To the point where we oftentimes from the DVD generation, probably even the video generation, VHS generation, have had, in fact, guaranteed from the VHS generation, had like multiple versions of the same film. Oftentimes, even with the same special features, bar one thing or a slightly better transfer. I remember having Halloween on like three different VHSs of it. I got it from Menzies at the time, or maybe Smith, I think it was Menzies. And it was the first one I ever owned, and it wasn't the original poster artwork. So when they released that, I got that, right? And I realised later that it was the widescreen version of the video. If you remember back to the day that I was a bit naive about widescreen, but I think at this point I had, you know, I thought you were losing picture. But at this point,
yeah,
I think,
it's a hard concept to get around.
But I think at this point I had got the widescreen thing. But the problem was that because it was the widescreen version, it was very much plumped in at the top of the box, widescreen.
Okay.
And instead of where in the actual poster it says, the night he came home,
aye,
it had like new widescreen transfer or something like that. It had, right? So I ended up going back and it was Woolworths at the time, yeah, and buying the regular version because that didn't have that, and it did have the night, okay, he came home. Yeah. I saw it one day and my heart sunk.
Right.
That was pretty bad. That's you know, it's three versions of that. I remember Texas Chainsaw Massacre on DVD. I had three versions of that.
Oh yeah.
I had the original one that was released, the first time it was released in DVD. Then they really released it in like a kind of like a cardboard box, a gatefold almost.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it was like a black box. And Virgin at that point, or V Shop, whatever it was called at that point, were doing a V Shop exclusive.
Right.
And it was a white version of the black box. And I had vouchers for my birthday or something, and it was only for V-Shop, and I couldn't... I think I actually tried to like get you to buy them off me or something like that, so I could get it somewhere,
okay,
else. I wanted the black box. So I ended up getting this fucking white box, right? And like one of my friends, not you, I have other friends, like to this day, ribs me whenever he sees this. He says, you got the black version of that? Like, he just... And he nipped at me so much that eventually managed to find it. I think it was in-game or something. It was second-hand. Yeah. At one point, and it's in pretty good condition. I managed to pick it up for like £6, and I got it, and I was like, yeah, "Fuck, I've got that now." And I mean, and those are all instances where nothing was really essentially different.
Yeah.
So you can imagine what it's like when you get something that has either a shit transfer and amazing extras, or I mean, and you spoke many times about picking up different versions from all over the world for like one extra.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you just need it. You know, you want to see it, and you're like, "Oh, I need it." You know. Recently, obviously, the same with the Day of the Dead. I've now got three versions of that on Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It's a random one to have. I've got the Return of the Living Dead. I've got the Second Sight UK one Blu-ray, which is a cracking set. It's really good. It's got an amazing documentary on it. More Brains. I think it's only on this one, the UK one, but it doesn't have the two audio commentaries that are on the US Blu-ray.
Right.
So I'm going to have to fucking pick that up at some time. So, that's my little introduction to this little kind of crazy corner, which I call Double Dip Corner. Gary's going to give us an exclusive here to one of his recent purchases.
Yeah. I picked up this, I think it's Korean, version of Melancholia.
Uh-huh.
And this is from a company called Plain Archive.
Right.
Who I think sort of trying to do these kind of deluxe... slipcase editions,
right,
slipbox even. It's got a booklet, so that's quite nice. It's not quite as good as I thought, because if you look at the front, the picture seems a little soft focus, which I thought it might be a sharper image.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Taxi Driver set.
Right, okay.
No, I like that though.
Aye.
Even with the soft focus, it looks like a really old photograph.
Mm-hmm.
What about special features wise, is there anything?
It's the same, except it's missing the documentary that's on the UK one, which is about the Zentropa studio.
Got you. I like the artwork on that show.
It's a lot better than the UK, and even the US one is pretty poor.
So there you go, folks. That's even a version that has less on the disc than the UK version. Yeah. But the booklet's really nice.
Aye.
Not in English though,
no,
obviously.
No.
Guy doesn't like English reading stuff. Don't you know, Gary? I'm not going
to
play.
I like to stretch myself, you know.
I'm not going to play Spreken Did You this time with this, because I can't actually read Korean.
Mm.
But no, that's really nice. Real nice. So my most recent double dip would have been, as I say, Day of the Dead. I'm trying to think. I think I spoke about it before, the Evil Dead. I managed to get the US version of that because it didn't have the UK one, didn't have the 4x3 like full frame transfer.
Yeah, like
that.
Yeah.
That's all it didn't have. Didn't have any special features on it, the US one. I think you've got to watch as well when you're double dipping, as Gary has told us before, is that you don't necessarily have to get rid of your old version before you know that you've got everything.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a DVD you got rid of.
Blair Witch Project.
that meant you didn't have everything.
Aye.
That was up after upgrading as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which she thinks a safe bet. That's the thing as well. You know, when they bring out a Blu-ray version or something, and it's like it's either not all of the special features that the DVD had.
Mm.
Which, I mean, how do you even explain that? You can explain it when they bring it out and it's got nothing on it.
Right.
You can say, right, okay, well, they're not giving a shit. But when Aye. They put partial, it's like. Guys, like, just like, there's more to that list. Yeah. Just do the rest. It's a bigger freaking disc. You know what I mean?
I know.
They can fit it on. I'm just being dicks about it, Gary.
Being dicks
about it. I guess one I'm looking to double dip on soon is, I'm just scrolling to it. Where did I have it? Oh yeah, they released that. Finally released that VCI Bird with a Crystal Plumage.
Mm.
Which has a comparable transfer to the Blue Underground one. Blue Underground, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, so no special features on it really though. I think it's Isolated Score.
Okay.
Which is, have you ever listened to an Isolated Score?
Yeah, I've never listened to one. No.
I don't know whether that's got any worth to it or not. Maybe do a Facebook poll. Mm. but yeah, I want to pick that up. See, I've already got the Arrow one. Which is most of the special features on it. Mm. The commentaries anyway that right. I'm interested in. I think there's a few other things in the Blue Underground one, but I'm not desperate for it.
Right.
I'd like a nicer transfer.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Side note, when you're talking about just about music there.
Sure.
Nevermind and Neutro are coming out on Blu-ray audio.
Oh, right. Disc, okay.
Which might be quite good, 24-bit, lossless.
Yeah.
Obviously, Nevermind. It's not very good, but
maybe you've got the Bushwig one. Audio, like right. That mix, as in you know.
Possibly.
It might sound better on that though. It might sound better in the 24 than the 5.1. I think it'll 5.1 or 2.
I'm not sure. That's kind of the new Super Audio CD.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah. I never got any. No.
So, I think we've reached the logical conclusion, Gary.
Yep.
Yeah, we've rambled on for plenty of time now that people who have been missing us will be hating us again. and people who hated us still hate us. So I think that wraps us up for this episode. I think I've already said that, but you can cut it back in, Gary. Next time, because of where everything falls, I believe is going to be our Halloween special, Gary. We have been thinking about what we're going to do for this. We have a couple of films that we are considering and debating. We're not going to announce just now what film it's going to be, or films, potentially maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. So it may be a surprise or may not be, depending on what we looked at. So stay tuned to the Facebook, see if it's something you're interested in to listen to. Hopefully it'll be fun. Remembering our Christmas special. I don't know, did we do anything really festive for last Halloween? Like, you know, the episode we just did it kind of fairly normal, didn't we?
I think so, yeah.
We'll see if there's anything to think about, like, duking for apples or that.
Okay, yep.
Remember at school they did it with a fork in the mouth? When we were at school. You weren't allowed to duke people's faces in. They used to put you in the back of a chair.
Yeah.
And you had like a towel over your neck or something like that. I don't know why the towel if you weren't getting the water. Anyway, and you had like a fork in your mouth and you had to draw for it.
Oh, yeah.
And it had to stick into an apple.
Mm.
God, man. That was like such a like pushy way of doing it, wasn't it?
Kind of, yeah.
I guess, mean, it saves you drowning some
biting
kids.
Biting a fork isn't much fun either. I know. But,
I know. Especially if you get fillings, which I didn't have, but some folk would have. Anyway, we lose track. Back onto the outro. So yeah, we're going to be back for our Halloween special. Hopefully, no, guaranteed it will be up for Halloween, motherfuckers. Right. I'm talking to Gary and his imaginary friends, obviously. Yep. No, it's going to be up for Halloween. Yeah, Gary?
Yes.
Definitely. So yeah, stay tuned to find out what it is on Facebook. And see if you can guess it.
Mm-hmm.
Might be easier, might not be easier. Depending how much we tease it. So, that does, Gary.
I'll wrap it.
Yeah.
I think.
So, as always, thanks for listening. Sorry for the massive gap in episodes there. We're going to, as always, try and get back to a regular schedule. Just know that when we're not here, it's not because we don't love you. It's because we're busy doing better things. No. We're just busy. Not necessarily doing better things. Just doing things that stop us getting here. Anyway. So goodbye from me. It's been a pleasure as always.
Till next time.
Nightmare.